Holy schnitzel, we're back. How excited are you? Now, I thought we'd continue from home because we got kicked out of the office, but this way we can keep it super casual, and which is a bit of a bigger challenge for me because the whole crew's here. Say hi, crew. But we've got so much more to explore, so let's get to it.
Hello up there, my name is Jennifer Whithelm. I'm learning and development professional and the creator of the blog Learning on Steroids, or in German, Lernen in Geil. I talk about cool new ways of learning with experts mainly from Germany, but I had to ask this nice Canadian lady whether she likes to talk to me too. And this is Lauren, aka the Learning Pirate. Would you be so kind to introduce yourself, please?
Well, hello, everyone. I think guten Tag. Is it good morning? Guten Tag. from Toronto. I am Lauren Walden. I am the founder of this very cool company called Learning Pirates, and scientific learning design is the focus. So everything brain and learning and memory and focus, and we'll dive into some of that today. That's what we specialize in.
Perfect. And no, you have a tattoo which says something like "Yar." What is this whole learning pirate thing actually?
Well, the Yar stands for "You are really ready," and that's my mantra when I was learning. When I had that moment of, "Oh, I know this, I can do this." But the pirate. So I've always been a little bit of a pirate myself. Ever since I was a little girl, I've been sort of wandering off and curious and on to the next adventure. But when it came to learning and the learning industry, knowing that I wanted to really create a big wave of change, you know, when you put the word pirate in your company name, people tend to want to know what's going on there. So that's sort of the two sides of it. It was, can we change a little bit and cause a little bit of disruption? And then can we chase some curiosity and all go on a new journey together?
Mm-hmm. So the pirate thing is the one aspect when I think of Lauren Waldman. The other thing is the brain. So why are you so nerdy about the brain?
You know, there's so many reasons I'm nerdy about the brain. I think one of the biggest ones is because when you have never learned about it before, and then all of a sudden you're learning more and more and more about your operational system, you can't help but fundamentally change the way you think and act and do everything. It's so fascinating. And I think if we had learned all these things when we were younger, and when we, you know, from even how our behaviors are, what are our emotions and our feelings, and then how do we learn with all of this knowledge? It really does make a significant difference. But the brain, to me, you know, if you know the story of Alice in Wonderland, you know, Alice was chasing the rabbit. To me, the rabbit is the brain. And I just keep chasing it because it's so fascinating and there's so much to know. And again, it's really the essence of what, you know, amongst other things, what makes us us.
I read a sentence on your homepage, which more or less says like something like the brain makes all of us. So do I understand it correctly that every personality really is made up 100% by my brain? Is there no soul, no heart, no guts, no glory, etc.? Is it really just the brain?
No, there's definitely, you know, there's all of those other elements. We're not only a brain. We are a body. We are a mind. We are, you know, if you believe in the soul and everything else. But when you start to understand just how dependent and we are on this operational system, you know, if anything goes wrong in there, we fundamentally change in one way, shape, or form. So we're not only the brain, but I think because we, you know, most of us were never exposed to exactly what does this 3 pounds that I carry around in my head do? What does it actually do for me on a day-to-day basis? Which is, you know, it helps me breathe. It helps me think. It helps me feel. It creates behavior. It's allowing me to move my fingers right now and listen to your voice and track your movements. It really is something that we really do need to be paying a lot more attention to, especially when it comes to the learning industry.
Mm-hmm. I recently did a Harvard Business School online e-learning course after work. I literally fell asleep 5 times during that. So after work, after this online course, I voluntarily continued with your e-learning course, Joining Forces with Your Brain. And this e-learning really felt like an interactive, fun Netflix series, although it was 100% asynchronous. And I was wondering why it felt that way. I have some thoughts about that because it was really fun. We'll speak about that in a second. But what is your secret? Why did it feel that way from your point of view?
Well, there's nothing in the series that hasn't been very intentionally and strategically designed. So now we're going into my world, which is scientific learning design. And this is something that is very new to, you know, to learning, because this isn't done in our educational systems, and it's certainly not done nearly enough. It's very niche in the learning and development world. So when we're scientifically learning design, we're really working with the operational system of the brain. So when you understand working memory, when you understand the capacity of that, how much can I really give you as far as information, knowledge, activity within a small amount of time to work with that operational system as opposed to working against it, I know how to keep you a little bit better engaged. Mm-hmm. And then we've got, you know, so many more things that we can play with, you know, attention and focus, which we cover in the series. You know, how do you hold or guide, I should say, how do you guide someone's attention to help them focus on the things that you want them to listen to or to read or to watch? Well, we know these things because we understand that there's multiple attentional networks in the brain, and we can stimulate and guide that attention to help somebody focus. So that's sort of the, you know, a little bit of the underlying parts of the design. But then we've got all the fun things. You know, I think you saw, I'm a prankster. I like to joke. And, you know, as much as it was so much fun for me to, you know, run around and scare people, mostly my sister, but it all served a purpose. You know, the brain loves novelty. Mm-hmm. It loves those unexpected surprises. So I wanted to engage that part of people's brains to expect the unexpected, but without overstimulating it. And then, as you probably noticed, you know, every chapter, every video, we call them chapters. The longest one, I think, was maybe 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. So we're really not doing that whole 20-minute, 30-minute, one-hour lecture, which was, oh yeah, horrifically boring. So it really does come down to the elements of, you know, how do we scientifically design learning in order to optimize the function of someone else's brain? Mm-hmm.
I perceived elements like jokes, fast fun cards, novelties, interviews with random people from the streets, funny kids explaining the world, teasering and creating curiosity. Yeah, I speak about that in a minute. Changing camera settings, outtakes with yourself, a Homer Simpson flying in, engaging music like engaging appeals to pause and to write something down. These are the visible elements. And I think these are the ones that are referring to novelty and telling stories and expect the unexpected. Are there invisible elements as well that I did not really perceive?
Oh, absolutely. So when I designed the series, you know, it's a lot of people will go into a learning design and their focus is on, well, how do we break down the content? What's our content? How much content can we throw at somebody? Because this is what we really need them to understand and learn. When I design something, it's not only how do I work with their operational system, but it's how do I embed skills? So this series was me sitting on the other side of the screen, me going into the side of the person who was going to be intaking the learning and thinking, okay, this isn't one and done. And we see a lot of this in learning in our industry, which is we watch it, we read it, we listen to it, we're done with it. So everything that was, you know, was designed was really to work with how do we layer and how do I engage somebody? How do I facilitate you? You know, if you're in one of my workshops, if you're in a keynote with me, you're being facilitated and guided through the whole thing. So how could I have this conversational interaction with the people on the other side of the screen without actually being with them? And using the theory of metacognition, which is how do I help somebody become the audience to their own performance while they're going through this learning journey? And there was a lot of those underlying methods built into the design that, you know, I could maybe one day do a video that sort of, you know, we look behind the curtain, you know, when the Wizard of Oz, they look behind the curtain and there's the wizard. Mm-hmm. And I could show people, well, this was the intentionality. And this is why I put that Homer Simpson flying in at that moment. And this is why I decided to go out onto the streets and talk to this, you know, at this time. Everything had a purpose. Everything had meaning mm-hmm. behind it. And I think, you know, having, you know, Jennifer, you've gone through the series. I think it's in the second video. I share that with people. Mm-hmm. There's a reason. There's always a reason behind something I would be asking you to do or whatever it is that you're going to be engaging in.
Yes, well, one can really see that a lot of money went into the recording, into the production of this whole e-learning, and it is really clearly not fitting to any authoring tool, nor is it similar to any rookie user-generated content. What do you think about these elements in L&D, about authoring tools in a scheme, about user-generated content? Are these nuggets working as well in another context, or what's your opinion?
I think, you know, all of the authoring tools have a great purpose, but it always comes down to, have you designed effectively for the tool? And with a lot of people, you know, really not necessarily understanding the fundamental levels of, well, how does someone else's brain, or how does my brain even, how does it create a memory? And then if I'm going to upload something into an authoring tool, how can I use that tool to the best of my knowledge with the knowledge of also, well, how do I create that memory? Or how, like what we were saying before, how do I guide someone's attention to focus on something? Now, what capacity does this tool have for me to do that? So a lot of people will use buttons and they'll use, you know, click-throughs, and they'll use music and animations, but are you intentionally and strategically thinking about how that's being used, why you're using that, and how that other person's brain is going to engage with that in order to take in what you want them to learn, but more importantly, what you want them to remember? Mm-hmm. The reason why I decided, and why I felt personally that it was incredibly important for me to put a lot of money into the production of the series, is because I didn't see anything like that out there, outside of a master, you know, the master classes of the world. And, you know, you've got some fun things on Netflix, but I didn't see anything that had that high production value that still had a very high learning value to it. And I felt that it was about time to show everyone that we can have both. Mm-hmm. And that I think we deserve it. we deserve to have it. But it was what I wanted to bring to the world as well. Mm-hmm. It really was. I wanted to create something that I hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm. I think you absolutely made that achievement.
Oh, thank you.
And for someone in a company who only has authoring tools, are there three elements or three aspects that you can recommend to always consider them to just help bringing the message across? So what are the three receipts I really need for a good e-learning in an authoring tool?
Choose your content wisely, because we know that, you know, if we just start dumping in content, your e-learning could be hours, it could be days, and nobody has patience or time for that. So you must be very intentional and strategic with your content. So when you think about that, here's what I encourage people to do is, when, you know, I've described this sometimes as a game of Jenga, you know, with the blocks. And if you start with a full brick of content, if you start removing blocks, does your tower of content fall over, or is it still stable? So that's sort of the first sort of element. And then it's, why am I putting this in here? Is it a transferable? Is it something that someone can encode to transfer it as a skill, ability, a behavior? And if it's not, really question, is it a foundational knowledge that I need in order to keep that tower stable? Or is it just something that somebody else wanted me to put in there? Because remember, the working brain, the memory is very limited and we want to work within the capacity of it. So that's number one. Number two, when it comes to attention, let's talk about how many different elements are on that screen. You know, I see so many e-learnings. It's got music, it's got animation, it's got buttons, someone's talking at you, click here, do that. And when you think about the resources, you know, how many resources we're using to then go through that maybe one page. So I've got to read something. Well, that's taking a little bit of my cognitive energy. Now I'm listening to something. Well, my brain is also processing that. But then you're asking me to do something. Well, my brain is also processing that. And when you start to add up all of these things, you could have maybe eight things that the brain is trying to process at one time. Mm-hmm. And is that really an effective use of the resource and the energy? So start thinking about those things too. And then your time. How much time are you asking somebody to engage in this, right? Now, we know from research as of late, because of what's called our ultradian rhythms, we can go through different bouts of focus throughout our day. But on average, I think they're looking at about 90 minutes of good focus is what the average person can really do. And during those 90 minutes, we're going to mind wander. We're going to sort of lose that focus and come back to it. So it doesn't serve us to create e-learning that is like hours and hours long, because it just works against the operational system itself.
Let's say I want a fun e-learning like the one that you provided. Is this something you can support me in? And what would be the next steps for me?
Oh gosh, yes. I love designing. I enjoy and I love designing for so many different industries and organizations, because it's always an interesting new journey for me to explore. When I engage in organizations, it's usually they'll bring me in to do a bespoke training, which is or a learning design. So I will work with their teams. I'll work with their stakeholders. I think it's typical of what everyone is used to in the industry. I think where my methodologies might change is from the very inception, I will be using, if we're looking at collecting data to understand what learning is very much needed, I'm drawing from science. And it's not necessarily neuroscience. For there, I might go into behavioral science. I'll be looking at behavioral interviewing techniques. I'll really be diving in there and working with all the stakeholders. For me, I love looking at cross-functionality and looking at, well, how does what you want to do impact the rest of the organization and the rest of the people that everyone's working with? Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter of, let's get to designing and let's use everything in the scientific arsenal in order to make this not only a memorable, you know, we want it to be fun, engaging, but your organization is looking for someone to have a tangible, transferable skill, behavior, or ability. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's just, I love my clients. I love learning. And for me, I'm such a nerd, but I love learning about all the different industries as well, because it's always a new puzzle for me to piece together when it comes to the design.
You mentioned this interesting aspect about learning with YouTube or Google or LinkedIn on your course. Would you kindly explain more about the connection between these content sources and brain energy, Google, YouTube, LinkedIn, and maybe ChatGPT as well, because I see a big potential in ChatGPT for learning and development.
Yeah, there's sort of a little side camera moment where I just, you know, talk to everybody about YouTube and all of the resources that you just listed. They're great learning resources, again, if they're being used intentionally and strategically. But as we all know, you can wind up in a rabbit hole with those. And it's a lot of wasted time. So as a supplement, and if you design those into something that you're trying to learn, they're wonderful. But if you're finding that people are going to them as learning resources because whatever was created wasn't sufficient enough, mm-hmm. or wasn't doing what we needed it to do from a learning perspective, now we're going into a place where we're losing time. So the ROI is now going down, because if I have to Google something multiple times, but it's in relation to something that you've already presented to me to learn. If I'm doing your e-learning, but I didn't really understand or I didn't learn enough, and now I'm using these other resources, I'm wasting a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. My last question actually is a personal one. I'm training for a marathon currently, and I wondered whether you have any brain advice for me, because I realize that the brain is really the most mental hurdle in this whole achievement.
You know, it's my instinctual answer that my mind just said was don't do it, because I'm not, you know, I work out, I love training, I love yoga, but the one thing you will never get me to do is run unless there is a dinosaur chasing me. But you know, when it comes to that, you know, it's interesting because a good friend of mine is he does marathons as well, and he does Ironmans. And I said, oh my God, like, that's crazy. Like, I see you cross the finish line and you look like you're running towards your death at that point. What is it? But really when it comes to it, it's, you know, it's motivation, right? It's that sustainability of your dopamine to keep you motivated as you're going. It's you need good rest. There is an abundance of research on sleep and the implications of that on our mental health, on our physical health, our diet, obviously. What if, you know, we've got a whole set of neurons in our gut, in our biome, there's neurons in our heart. We have to take care of the whole system. So when it comes to what I think is kind of madness, as far as running a marathon, it's not just that mental preparation, but just realizing that the whole system needs to be working effectively. So diet, sleep, and just, you know, really making sure that your dopamine and that motivation can be sustained as you're going.
Perfect. Lauren Boltman, thank you so much for this chat. And you guys out there, please subscribe to my YouTube channel or to my podcast on the usual platforms like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, etc. And please check out my website. That's www.jenniferwithelm.de or www.lerneningeil.de for everyone who is more keen on writing.